issue on the four legs. Chaturhotram, four kinds of fruitive activities. Translation. O Lord, your form is worshipable by performances of sacrifice, but souls who are simply miscreants are unable to see it. All the Vedic hymns, Gayatri, and others are in the touch of your skin. In your bodily hairs is the kusa grass. In your eyes is the clarified butter. And in your four legs are the four kinds of fruitive activities. Purport. There is a class of miscreants who are known in the words of Bhagavad Gita as Vedavada, or so-called strict followers of the Vedas. They do not believe in the incarnations of the Lord, what to speak of the Lord's incarnation as a worshipable hog. They describe worship of the different forms of or incarnations of the Lord as anthropomorphism. In the estimation of Srimad Bhagavatam, these men are miscreants. And in Bhagavad Gita 7:15, they are called not only miscreants, but also fools and the lowest of mankind. And it is said that their knowledge has been plundered by illusion due to their atheistic temperament. For such condemned persons, the Lord's incarnation as the giant hog is invisible. These strict followers of the Vedas who despise the eternal forms of the Lord may know from Srimad Bhagavatam that such incarnations are personified forms of the Vedas. Lord Bohr's skin, his eyes, and his bodily hair holes are all described here as different parts of the Vedas. He is therefore the personified form of the Vedic hymns, and specifically the Gayatri Mantra. So the Lord, having performed his pastimes, then now he manifests so that everyone can appreciate and understand that he is the Supreme Lord. I mean, it's basically obvious, but still that form will be new to the demigods. They won't have seen a, you know, universal-sized pig before. So now, then taking the bluish color, then one can understand this is Lord Vishnu. So then they come forward, they start offering prayers. Before they're also offering, but now is he will reciprocate, because before that he was busy with the performance of his pastimes of saving the earth and killing the demons. So having now done this, now the sages are glorifying and they're showing how he is the Vedas personified. This is the, he is the Vedas personified. The Vedas cover everything, so then that means Krishna is everything. But here then, specifically then, we have these aspects that are very obvious. In other words, you start from the most obvious, and then you go to the most subtle. In other words, what is noticeable to you, that's where you start. Right? So basically, the forms, you know, these external forms are very much appreciated. So then we will start from things that will be familiar to us, like kusa grass we will take as, you know, important. Or, how you say, the Gayatri, Vedic hymns, right? So all these different things then work very nicely. So we're trying to come to the same similar point as these sages, right? That's why this story is given. Because otherwise the story has been told so many times in so many places. But now the story is being told so that we can appreciate how everything is Krishna. Right? Because otherwise we hear that the Lord did this, Lord did that. That's nice. That's good. It attracts the mind. It absorbs us. But same time as it's also beyond that, everything is Krishna, everything is Krishna's pastime. But because of basically this Vedavada, position, then where we do follow religious principles, we're very strict about it. I mean, generally speaking, is couldn't care less, but those few that we do choose, then it's like, you know, everybody better be following them. You know, it's like You know, when you have a cold, the whole temple's got a cold, right? You know. So, like that, then we're trying to appreciate that the broadness of the Lord's appearance. Otherwise, it's very easy. Okay, yes, He's the deity, He's the holy name. That works very well. But that other things are, everything is coming from Him, okay, that works very well. But then if everything's coming from Him, that means everything has some kind of connection. Then this is the part where it goes wrong. Because God is good, that's it. And we have our idea of what's good and bad, so what we call bad, God can't be involved in that. But at the same time, we're very involved in that. You know what I'm saying? In other words, what we choose as religious, that we're trying to be very good about. But what we haven't identified as religious, then we're not really worried about it. We're just being real. Right? Does that make sense? So this is where the Vedavada part comes in. You know, even in a subtle way, is the foolishness, making these mistakes, because of the anartas that are left, because of the mundane consciousness that is left. So then we are distracted from that. So the sages are giving ways that we can even take those elements and connect them. But that means there must be faith, right? So even here we see that Krishna made it more obvious to give faith to everybody by assuming his natural bluish color. Because before that in this Varaha, then you have Sweta Varaha is white, or Yajna Varaha is red, like this. So then, so this specifically was Sweta Varaha, though the stories have been combined. Jiva Goswami gives that, suggests that point, that he's combined both of these manifestations for this story. So, the whole idea is that we can know the Lord. One, we know the Lord through all the Vedas, all the Vedic literatures, all the things that are the pious activities of the Vedas. So then that means then we would have to connect everything back to the Vedas. We'd have to connect everything back to Krishna. What's trying to be avoided here is following the Vedas without connecting it to Krishna. There's a rule, nice. You don't know why it's for, that doesn't mean the rule's bad. It means you need to educate yourself. The idea is, oh, you don't know, throw it out. Okay, well, we don't know so many things, right? Do we? Right? So, because of that, then, do we throw it out? No. So, that's why then, in this, we have to recognize that we ourselves have a specific position by which we view the world. Taking that specific position, we have to see, how can I connect that to Krishna? Because that is your consciousness. Whatever is important to you, that is your consciousness. That is how you view everything else. So now, the question is how to connect that to Krishna? Because if you don't, then how are you Krishna conscious? Does that make sense? Right? You know, okay, it's obvious we chant, we take prasadam, we do all those practices that are direct, those are obvious, that's the most important. But the distraction generally doesn't come from the direct, from the most obvious. The distraction comes from the indirect, what's not obvious. So if Krishna's created everything, then that means it's all connected to Him, right? The gopis are able to see a tamal tree. Tamal's black, Krishna's black, therefore they remember Krishna. Right? Okay, so then we'll go, okay, but you know, I'm sitting, you know, in Tallahassee. I don't have any tamal trees. So, you know, how do I work it out? You know, like that. Okay, a black limousine went by, you know, I got my black Nike shirt on, you know, like that. So, but the point is there's a quality. Here it happened to be the blackness, right? They didn't take the texture of the bark or the particular shape of the tree, right? Means there's something there that they took, and that was what they appreciated, right? They like Krishna. He's black. They like black. They see the tree. It's black. So therefore they remember Krishna. Does that make sense? So that means if you sat down and thought about everything that has an impression on you, right? Everything that's important to you, and note it down, right? Then, having noted that, note the quality that's important. Right? It's not the tamal tree, it's the blackness of the tamal tree that's important. Right? It's not that the gopis are, you know, botanists and, you know, oh wow, a tamal tree. Wow, okay, wow, great. Does that make sense? So, in other words, we appreciate things based on qualities. Right? Even the form still has qualities. Otherwise, how do you interact? You can't interact with a form. You interact with qualities. Does that make sense? The qualities are what's dynamic. The form is not. The form is static. Right? If you think about it, you may think the form's moving in that, but that's not what you're interacting with. You're interacting with the quality. Does that make sense? Right? So from form comes quality, then comes pastime. Right? So the gopis, they see the qualities, that's how they get to the pastime. Otherwise, we see a tree and we're thinking, how do I get to the pastimes from this? Right? So it's nice, it sounds great. Okay, one or two things you can catch. What about everything else? Right? So that's the idea then that is being given by these kind of verses, really, these really nice, boring verses that everyone tries to, you know, skip through as quickly as possible. Right? But these are the verses that enter into your life. They go with you into your house. They go with you into every room of your house, every drawer, every little bag, every little thing in the bag. These are the verses that go with you. Because these are dealing with that thing, those things. They're dealing with that broadness. Right? So that's what we're trying to appreciate is qualities. It's qualities that make things work. The form is not good enough. The form is the start. The form is the natural external manifestation of a quality. Right? Something that's strength, we generally think of very big and, you know, very large. You know, you see a very large pillar, you say, wow, that looks very strong. Right? But it's the strength that's appreciated. Or the bigness, you know, that expanse, that, you understand? It's not specifically the column. Or you say, oh, but the tradition of it, or the some aspect of it, but there's the quality that's appreciated. Does that make sense? Nouns are based on verbs. Verbs carry the quality. Right? Otherwise, if it doesn't do something, what's the use of it? Right? Does that make sense? If it doesn't do something, why will any man be interested in it, right? It doesn't do anything. Wow, I have this great thing. Wow, what does it do? Nothing. You know, it's kind of like, wow. Wow, check out the gizmo I just got. Wow, this is such a great gizmo. Well, what's so great about it? It does nothing. Oh, okay. Well, I have this nice rock here I picked up off the ground. It also does nothing, and it was free. Right, you know? You understand? So, the quality. Women aren't going to be interested either, because if it doesn't do something, that means there'll be no result. No result, no experience. No experience, what's the use? Right? Does that make sense? So qualities are the important point. Prabhupada says, Rupa Goswami is attracted by Krishna's qualities. Because of that, then everything works. It's the qualities that are important. Right? The quality then has a natural form. Quality then means pastimes can go on. Right? So that's the principle that's working here. So then it's the quality of anything that is important. Now, the closer we get to these standard forms, the more natural is its position, the more potency is there, the more fullness, right? Just like Krishna, Swayam Krishna, then Krishna expands as Balaram, then expands as Vaikunthapati, then expands as the Purusha avatars, comes down into the, you know, into the material world, into the universal form. So as you expand, you're dealing with less and less and less of Krishna's potency. Right? Connection is still there, but like Krishna says, the whole material universe is run by a spark of his splendor. Just one spark is enough to run this joint, right? Because not a lot's happening. Pretty dull, right? You may say, no, so much is happening. Okay, so keep doing that for a few days. Then we'll come back and rediscuss this point. Right? It gets dull. Because we're only dealing with a spark. We're not dealing with more. So therefore, the hierarchy is there. Therefore, the importance to know, one, is the creation is there to connect everything to Krishna, because you see how it unfolded. At the same time, it's very important because you must reverse it. Right? That's why the Puranas, every Vedic literature starts with creation. It shows how you got from Krishna down to whatever is the topic that you're dealing with. Then you reverse it and take it back. So that's our business, to take it back. So you start with whatever is the point that is interesting to you, connect that to Krishna, then connect that to the higher elements of Krishna. Right? So in the beginning it may be the qualities, the form is there, but what's the quality of it? That's what you're actually interested in. Right? That, because if to do that, then you have to think. Right? Oh, you know, why do you have that? Oh, I like it. Why do you like it? Oh, never thought about it. Right? But that's why it is. You know, sometimes you go, well, why do you like it? Oh, I didn't think about it. Well, I guess it's this, it's that. Well, it's red, you know. It's like, I like red. You know? So the thing that becomes less important. Right? Okay, but why do you like red? Oh, it's warm, it's this, it's that, it's comforting. Okay, so Krishna's not comforting? The residents of Vrindavan don't think he's the most comforting person to have around? Right? Oh, I like that because it's, you know, very strong and all that. Krishna's not the strongest. Right? Oh, it's very beautiful. Krishna's not the source of all beauty. You understand? That means there's nothing that you deal with, no matter what it is, that doesn't actually, the reason you like it is because of its connection to Krishna. You think it's the thing. That's Maya. Right? Oh, I like my, you know, new, you know, how you say, Nike shoes. Okay, so you like your Nike shoes. Okay. But why do you like your Nike shoes? The quality that's there is actually Krishna. Then you see, it's all right to like my Nike shoes. No, it's all right to like Krishna. The shoe is Maya, because you don't see Krishna. You see Krishna, it's not Maya. Then it's fine liking your shoes. Does that make sense? It throws it into a different category. This is the category that the residents of... When they say the devotee sees Krishna everywhere, what does that mean? You know what I'm saying? That means everything is udipan for the devotee. There's some quality. Because they know qualities, right? They know the 64 qualities of Krishna. Therefore, they can identify those qualities anywhere. 64 is enough for us to function in this world. Right? 64 arts, unite, so you're dealing with all these finities, so the 64 qualities, you can find one of those in everything. Does that make sense? You don't have to go, just like there is time less than 1/11th of a second, but less than 1/11th of a second doesn't actually mean anything to us as far as our experience goes. Our experience is limited within 1/11th of a second. That's a moment. Right? So, you don't need less than that. You can do that for astrological calculations, other things like that. But as far as your experience, 1/11th of a second is all you need. So, therefore, quality, 64 qualities is enough. Even at the 26th of the devotees is enough. Right? So, appreciating people, you only need 26. Appreciating Krishna in everything, 64 does it. Does that make sense? It's a very direct, scientific, that's what Prabhupada says, the science of devotional service. Right? It's a science. It's a science beyond anything that any non-devotee has ever dreamt up. Right? It's even beyond what any devotee has dreamt up. Right? The acharyas give what their acharyas give and illuminate that. They don't dream up anything. Right? So to dream something up, you're on your own. Right? Does that make sense? They don't do it in the spiritual world. And over here, it's only what Krishna reveals and they do, so it doesn't exist. Intelligence is there, using the intelligence, right? That's part of your faculties. So how to use your intelligence best to please Krishna, then that's what's desired. But to actually do that, right? Does that make sense? That's the point. If you're dealing with management and you don't deal with the qualities, how you'll deal with the people, right? If you're dealing with people, you're not dealing with the qualities, how are you dealing with people? Right? If you're dealing with yourself, if you're not dealing with the qualities, what are you dealing with? Your nose? Your ear? My tattoo? Hey, check my tattoo out. Right? Does that make sense? What are you dealing with? It's a quality. So therefore, all these qualities of Krishna manifest through all these things. The purity, the different things, these are all there. Right? The kusa grass is pure. Right? From that is sacrifice. He is sacrifice personified, so the hairs on his body are kusa. Right? You're always going to sit on kusa, that's your seat. So everything's going to be based on this. Right? Your eyes is the clarified butter. Right? Ghee makes everything, gives it taste, gives it rasa. It's the medium through which, when you cook, all the spicing is there. Everything is there. So when you're talking, where's the medium? Right? Words are there, but if the eyes don't match the words, you know something's wrong. And if the words, and if the eyes are doing better than the words, it still flies. But if the words are very nice, but the eyes aren't, you don't buy it. Right? Does that make sense? No? Anyone wants to know where I get all these things? It's right here. You understand? It's just a matter of looking. You just have to look, right? Otherwise, Bhagavatam's philosophy. Philosophy's nice, but I got to pay my bills. I got to somehow or another keep my family, you know, situation together. You know, keep from saying the wrong thing. Work it out with the neighbors. Oh no, that guy just walked out. Now how to, you know, comfortably walk around the other side of the park without looking that I'm avoiding him. How to do all these things. You know, that's reality. You know, but Bhagavatam's philosophy. Yes, Bhagavatam's philosophy for those who don't want to know Krishna. Bhagavatam is your life for those who want to go back to Godhead. It's that simple. Maybe not palatable, but that's simple. That's the nice thing about Krishna consciousness, or about anything, is that it's very, very simple, right? So much detail is there. But because you start with the principle, it is very simple. Right? Does that make sense? So in other words, we can see here that Prabhupada always supports Vedic culture, but he doesn't have anything good to say about these Vedavadas, or so-called strict followers of the Vedas. So that means you follow the Vedas, but according to actual its purpose, pleasing the Lord. Right? Seeing the Lord in everything. Why? What's the problem with the Vedavada Ratas? They perform the ritual but don't see the Lord in the ritual. Does that make sense? Like that. So these are hints. You're doing the ritual to please Krishna, so you're seeing Krishna, so therefore you're better than them, but you can see it right down into the ritual itself. In everything. Otherwise you get caught up in the ritual. You get distracted by the ritual. But that's the idea, is not to get distracted, but to be focused. So a broad variety of things are discussed so that everybody, all devotees, no matter what the situation, can find something that they can connect all the major important things of the life to Krishna. Any questions or comments on this? In the Veda, in the Rig Veda and the Vishnu Shukta, he performs his pastimes and puts everything into the Veda. So the Veda is saying that the Lord, in the rituals, he puts his pastimes. And so then the idea is to bring the performance of the rituals in contact with his pastimes. Okay, so the Veda Vadarat does get the opportunity. You understand? So the ritual has been there. I mean, I'm sorry if it was a mistake here, but somehow or another, I mean, maybe in nobody else's class you've ever met, but in our class, questions are an important part of the class. Therefore, I ended early so that the questions could be part of the class, so that I could end 5 minutes early, because I know no one can stand sitting here past, 9 o'clock. So I end 5 to 9 so that you will feel good about it. You know, you got some time, you stole some time, you can feel good. Like that. So therefore I end. So if you get up and walk out, then I understand you're not very inquisitive. That means you didn't absorb anything. Then I'm really sorry, it was a bad class. So if anyone else wants to get up, please wait until it hits 5 to 9. Like that. Otherwise, it's very insulting to the Srimad Bhagavatam that you're just following a ritual. And the ritual's over, I did it, I can get out of here and go do something important like my email or breakfast or go work out that fight I had just with my wife. Or whatever it is that's really, really pressing on your mind. Otherwise, it's not inspiring. You know what I'm saying? You do service so that you become you want to know. And from wanting to know, you become inquisitive. Therefore, as part of the class, we have questions. Nobody likes asking questions, therefore it's become fallen into disuse. A lot of people don't want to answer questions because they'll ask questions that they don't have an answer for. So many just, they end the class, won't ask for questions. I would do the class in 5 minutes and then ask for questions, but everyone would think it's weird. So therefore, I talk a little longer. Okay? Yes, that's good. So he's saying that the Veda has come from sound. Sound then is carried in ether. So if there's no chit potency there, then there's no question of realization. That's the whole idea, is that these material elements, even though they themselves are not spiritual, they carry the potency. That was a discussion by the, the four Kumaras. And I'm not sure who asked the question. But that topic came up. How is it that we're speaking, and that it's being vibrated by the mundane tongue, going in the mundane end, passing in the mundane ether, falling on the mundane ear, being digested by the mundane brain, and we get spiritual realization. So then the conclusion was, it's chit potency. That's why somebody can be chanting Hare Krishna and no potency. Another one chants, right? It means out there they're all chanting and very sophisticated, nice melodies, everything fabulous, sounds great, nobody's becoming a devotee. New Bhakta Jose, right, just joined yesterday, comes down, tells you chant Hare Krishna, the next day you're in the temple. What happened? Right? So, because of the chit potency. It's very, very important. These things, that's why the medium is important, because it's the natural form for carrying the chit potency. But if the consciousness is right, even an unorthodox form can carry the chit potency, but it has to have correct consciousness. But if you have, so correct consciousness also naturally, is comfortable with the natural form. But if one's not comfortable with the natural form, there's a good chance that the natural consciousness may also not be there, because you don't like the form because of an issue, therefore the issue is going to flavor your consciousness. It may carry, but it may not carry as much as it can. So the consciousness is right, that's where it says the rules don't matter, but it's consciousness that matters. But the rule is there to ensure the form is there, to give you the better chance that will remind you of the consciousness that's supposed to be carrying that potency. That's why then, if the opportunity is there, correct consciousness, correct form. Opportunity is not there, then yukta vairagya, correct consciousness, unusual form. But there's no such thing as unusual form, no consciousness. It's not an option like that. Is that so? Very good point, Thomas. So we'll end here. And if anyone has more questions, then at 9 o'clock we'll continue with question and answer if anyone wants. But otherwise, this is bail time officially. Okay. Jai. Grantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki, Srila Prabhupada ki, Samaveta Bhaktivrinda ki, Jainatai Gaura Premanandi. the magic plastic shoes in the toilet I mentioned. Okay, you have a temple in the city, right? Because as soon as you go to the city, you can't follow in the Vedicans, because Vedicans are meant for the village, right? You know, people are barefoot, all the women are pregnant, they're in the kitchen cooking. You know, it's just, you know, good old rubby, you know, everyone's covered from head to toe with cows on, right? That's how they knew that, what was it? Was it King Edward or something? He was from the city because he wasn't covered with cows on, right? You understand? So therefore, so we're in the, you know, we're naturally in, you know, the real place, you know, in the big city and all that stuff like that. But, you know, but are you right in the center of the city? Right downtown, right where everybody is, right? Is that, or are we kind of like trying to get on the edge? So we're trying to get a little bit of that ruralness in the city, you know, so that the peace, the thing. No. Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur's thing was city means right in the center. Right? You find the center. Go right there. Okay. So then we're there, so none of it applies. You know, somehow or another, how we use the bathroom in the city and how we'd use it in the village is different, right? Isn't it? Right? You know, the men stand up when they pass urine in the city. And they, when they go out in the village, they sit down, right? And the women in the city, they sit down, and when they go out in the village, they stand up. Is that how it works? Right? What's the difference? It looks different, right? The toilet has one shape in the city, and as soon as it leaves the city, it starts to, you know, transform like this, you know, like that. You know, that's how they got the idea for, you know, the movie, right? And then when they get out there, you know, then when you get there, something completely different. Isn't it? Yes. That's what it is. You know? So that's the whole point, is what's the difference? That's the whole, that's the illusion, is the city person thinks themselves superior. The city person thinks themselves superior, so therefore, it doesn't work. But it's the same bathroom. You go out to the farmer's house out in the middle of nowhere. You go out to the, you know, the Bavarian forest and ask to use that guy's bathroom. Is it really going to look different? No, maybe it's got some wood on the walls. But that's about it. That's the only difference. Same toilet, same sink, same mirror on the wall, same bathtub. Right? Same toilet paper. It's all the same. Right? So, therefore, in the temple... Why didn't you work it out? I mean, you do work on the temple, right? Köln, then you did how much did they spend? $100,000, right? Or the Deutschmarks in those days, it was very powerful, to soundproof the place and redo the place and build Bhadracharya ashrams, this and that. It was one paisa ever spent so you could wash your feet in the bathroom. One paisa. Let's go to London, where they also built so many things in the manor. No, they don't have paisa there. 1 cent, pound, well, no, a pence. How many pence or shillings was spent to wash your feet? Even though there's a bathroom just for devotees. No, magic shoes. Right? Let's go to Mwilambaa. Let's go to, you know, Alachua. Let's go to any place. The only place I've ever seen something to wash your feet, right, is to go into the deity room in L.A. and into the deity room in Hungary. That's it. At least that much. Right? So much money is that. Why? So why are we stuck with plastic shoes? Because the devotees actually think they work. They're comfortable with the mysticism of the plastic shoes. Right? That's mystic. That works. But you say something else, oh, we're realistic, Prabhu. Understand? Why haven't they built a bathroom like that? Why can't you put in, I mean, you can't put a tap in, you can wash your feet, it's not possible, you can't put a drain into your bathroom, right? Bathrooms have no drains, right? Like that. You know, you have a bowl and you have a jug, and you pour the water, and then, you know, your maidservant pours the water while you then wash your face. After washing your face, the maidservant puts down the jug, hands you a towel. You wipe your face. After that, the maidservant hands you your perfume, you spray that on. Bath finished. Right? Isn't that the way it is? That's how it works. There's no plumbing in Versailles. There's not one toilet in their sock. Nothing. So I'm saying, you know, okay, so it works. Yes, that's another thing. Yes, you're going to convince them to put on the plastic shoes? Like this. You go in and pass urine, right? So then the urine goes into the toilet receptacle, and it hits the very hard porcelain. And from hitting the porcelain, it in very small, microscopic splash, it goes flying out of the toilet onto the top of your foot, where the magic plastic shoe is not. And not only that, it goes onto the floor. Okay, so it keeps the bottom off. But the plastic is contaminated. So as soon as it steps there, it's contaminated, the bottom of your foot is contaminated. So when you walk out of the bathroom, then the top of your foot is sprinkled with little fine spray of your own urine, and it is covered, it contaminated on the bottom, possibly from yours and from a million other people who were in there first. Right? I'm just being this graphic, otherwise no one takes it seriously. Okay? Okay, so that's the idea. Then, therefore, why can't you wash your feet? You have showers, you have sinks, you had to put them all in. You have a bathtub, right? Even if nothing else, you can wash your foot in the bathtub or in the sink. We used to have a thing, everybody in the 70s had, they were expert, they could balance on one leg and wash your foot in the sink without touching the sink or the tap, right? Like that. It means when you first joined, hands, mouth, and feet were washed every time you ate, every time you went to bath. Not only that, they had one bathroom that was just for devotees. Because, you know, it was maintained in a more pure environment. Yes, they're going to do whatever they do. That's what happens when you live in the big city. You know? They want people to wash themselves and they're you know, not Vedic. Go to Japan. There, I think they do. Asia, they wash themselves. You know, all those, you know, how you say, the Wogs, you know, all those guys. They're the ones that are clean and wash themselves and stuff, you know. Not like the sophisticated Europeans, right? So the idea is that the devotees can follow the standard. And if you're worried about it, well, they go everywhere. Then you worry about it, that you have bathrooms and ways to clean yourself, that, you know, the kitchens and the meetings don't become bad. Think about this. If you buy a flat, why do you buy it? You consider it, you don't just get it because you find it possible. Right? You buy something that works for you. So you'll buy one that you can also maintain something. Guests come, they use the bathroom, they stay in the temple, and who cares? They're not walking in the meeting room, they're not walking in the kitchen, they're not working in the ashram, they're not working in places where the devotees have to go. They're walking the door, they're walking around the side of the door. Who knows where they've been standing before they came into the temple? Right? So therefore, people consider this stuff. Because the devotees go, this is where our care for the rules is getting us. Right? When we serve prasad to the devotees, this is my Lord Chaitanya in his pastimes. We read in Chaitanya Charitamrita how all the devotees would sit down in lines. Lord Chaitanya personally would serve them. How they would serve, what is being served. right? And now we do things buffet style, right? You know where buffet comes from? It comes from Swedish, right? The Swedish. They're known as, you know, for going out with iron helmets with horns on them, stark naked in the middle of winter, you know, after having taken, you know, this kind of the Datura intoxication, frothing at the mouth, spinning around in circles and lopping off anybody's head that comes in their way. Right? And so, therefore, that kind of person, then the buffet system works, because some of them are too drunk to get over to lunch and some of them aren't. So when they're sober enough, they get over and they get something to eat. Right? Does that make sense? So now, that's what we're doing here. Right? So Prashad's a zoo. Abhishek's are a zoo. Everything's a zoo. And then we're going to stand on that this is culture? That we're just being practical? This isn't practical. This is animal life. This is cheating. This is laziness. This is just don't want to know that I'm wrong and therefore I have to correct myself. But nobody's saying anything different than was introduced, you know, when Prabhupada was here. You know what I'm saying? Nothing's different. It's just a matter of, you know, the form is more important. And that form can't be Vedic because it's not the Vedic age, so it doesn't work, so the form must be modern. But where are the qualities? Right? You know, it's one of the most insulting things you can do to your guests is get them to stand up when they're eating. It's one of the worst, most offensive things you can do to someone who's eating. So what happens when you're doing buffet style and you want something more to eat? You have to get up, right? No one would ever let you sit down in a place that someone else has just eaten on. But when you're doing this buffet, what happens? You go and you plunk yourself down. Why? Because it's expedient. Hey, we only have to clean the place once. Right? It only takes, you know, 5 devotees to serve the prashad. And everybody else can be out, you know, going to the, you know, the shops and enjoying themselves. Right? Used to be Mayapur devotees were the hosts for the world. Right? Right? You're the caretakers of the dham. So you take care of people who come and visit. So, where does this come from? It didn't come from here. The Bengalis didn't dream this up. This has been dreamt up by the Westerners. And the Westerners, because they feel the rules don't matter, then therefore it introduces and no one blinks an eye. Right? You know what I'm saying? You ever notice what tunes the Bengalis sing? What tunes are they singing? Their own tunes? They're singing the tunes that they hear the Westerners sing. Yeah, Bollywood, man. The Westerners are also singing them. You know, a lot of times they don't know that they are. You know what I'm saying? So it's like, where's it coming from? It's coming from this idea is that we're doing Yukta Vairagya, we couldn't care less for the rules. But the point is okay, now why don't you technically explain that? Explain that according to our philosophy. You said it came out of your mouth, great. Now put your money where your mouth is. Let's hear the technical explanation. I guarantee you won't get one. Right? And if you push for one, then you're going to hit an emotional button, there'll be an explosion, and, you know, end of conversation. That's it. So it's what happened to our philosophy, what happened to our intelligence, what happened to our ability to analyze? Right? The only thing we can analyze is something critically. Oh, this guy's wrong, that guy's wrong. Oh, the Vedas, you know, are interpolated. Right? I just had one of that. Somebody just came up. Well, you know, it gets that and it's changed by all the people as the Vedas come down. How do we know what's real? What do you mean it's changed? What's this? Who said that? What foolish PhD said that? Right? You know what I'm saying? So that's what's going on. Where's the culture? Where's the faith? If philosophy has to be applied as culture, if there's no culture, where is the philosophy? Right? Prabhupada said if you have philosophy without religion, which means the culture, it's mental speculation. That's pretty rife. Or if you have religion but no philosophy, you have sentiment. Right? So then we go back and forth between them. Oh yeah, we don't care for this, that. So there's speculation. Then you pull them up on, okay, explain that, your philosophical point. Bang, goes into sentiment. There's no combination of the two. You combine the two, then you get very, intelligent human dealings. Then you get real culture. Whole point. You know what I'm saying? Because it matters. I'll say it doesn't, but I can go out and point out where it matters everywhere. Right? Before, you have a food stall. You have food there. You know, then it doesn't have to look nice, does it? Because you're just going to eat it. It's going to get mixed up in your stomach anyway, right? So what does it matter? No, if it doesn't look nice, the presentation, you don't buy it. Then the ones that are more successful are the ones that have a nice place you can sit, nice atmosphere. So therefore, then why? Years ago. But now, this is true. Doesn't take money. It was like, you know, what is this? This is not part of us. Right out of Bhagavata, Abba. You know what he's talking about? What is going on? That's the thing, is that the philosophy and the culture go together. We're supposed to develop them, not let them disintegrate. Come back after 10,000 years. Let's say 10,000. 60 years. Then you can do all this stuff, and in 30 years, the golden age will be gone. But now is the beginning. The point is that we'll go on. You want to get credit for making it go on, or you just want to be, you know, a face in the crowd? That's the whole point. Does that make sense? Like that. A contradiction on the deity base. Some say anybody can do it. Some say only those who are clean can do it. There's one other option. Only those with second initiation can do it. Yeah, how about that one? Prabhupada introduced that one. That. I don't know. These things come out of these far-off lands. And I know of the introduction of anybody could bathe the deity on Gaur Purnima came from Russia. That's where I first heard it come from.